Bet365 is paying out before the final whistle.
Check out Bet365's unrivaled early payout offer. When you bet on a team to win and they take a 17-point lead, you get paid no matter the final score. Forget the final whistle and start counting that cash. Hold up. You get early payout on parlays, too.
Download the app and see why it's never ordinary at Bet365. Gambling problem? Call 1-800-GAMBLER. 21 plus only. Must be physically located in Ohio. T&Cs apply.
With Ring cameras, you can protect your home from anywhere. You're at baggage claim, and you get a motion alert. Check live view and see a guy looking in your car window. Luckily, you've got floodlight cam. So you press the siren button and let 105 decibels do the rest. Problem solved. Home protected. Bag on its way. With Ring, you can protect your home from anywhere. Learn more at ring.com.
Hate doing cardio? Try brushing and flossing your teeth. I'm not talking about building up a sweat. I'm talking about building a healthier mouth for a healthier heart. For a healthier you. Smile Generation trusted dentists look at your care through the lens of the mouth-body connection, because what happens in the mouth plays a critical role for the rest of your body. To find a dentist near you committed to treating all of you, visit smilegeneration.com/confidence today and live longer, healthier, and happier with Confidence Unleashed.
Hey, it's your favorite sports talk show in the DMV, the Sports Junkies.
We're talking DC sports and having fun, chopping it up every day on the radio.
You can hear us every morning on 106.7 The Fan.
But did you know our show is also a podcast?
You can get every episode, every hour, and every single highlight on Apple Podcasts, Spotify, or wherever you get your pods.
And whenever works for you.
Just open up your favorite podcast app, search the Sports Junkies, and hit the follow button to get every minute of the show.
All right, join us right now. Guy's going to be on his last call here in a few days. Bob Carpenter, the voice of the Nationals on Masson.
Clap him up.
Clap retiring up, 20 years in the booth. What's up, Carp?
Good morning, gentlemen. How you all doing?
Yeah. We're doing well. Good.
How are you feeling about everything?
Yeah. You nervous for
By
Sunday?
The way, I feel like I just sank a 2-foot putt. Thanks for the polite applause.
You're always welcome.
Hey, you know what? The Americans aren't sinking 2-foot putts right now.
Yeah.
In the Ryder
Cup.
Yeah.
I shudder to think what I would shoot on that golf course. Yeah.
That's true. True. How are you feeling going into this weekend?
You know, I got to be honest. Today, butterflies. My family got into town. Most of them last night. Some more are coming today. I think I've been pretty cool, calm, and collected here for the last couple of weeks. Because I kind of knew once Labor Day come and went, this thing would start flying on me. And, you know, we were on the road trip last week and had time in New York and Atlanta just to, you know, have a lot of alone time and think a lot of things through. I feel like I'm in a really good place. I know I'm doing the right thing for my family. Mm-hmm. And this is the time of the season, you know, when you've had another losing season, that it kind of wears on you and you're kind of looking forward to the end of the season. Not that I ever don't want to do baseball, but you know, guys, it's a long season. It really is. Even though I'm taking more time off now, than I had in those early middle of my career years with the Nats. But, you know, just seeing my family, my wife came in yesterday, and then, you know, my daughters came in, the son-in-law, the grandsons, and just seeing them and being around them, it's like, wow, this is real. This is really happening. And so I've got some butterflies going into the weekend.
Well, I mean, the obvious question, what are you going to miss the most?
I think just being at the ballpark every day, that's the fun part. To get out of your car, knowing you're doing a Major League Baseball game, you know, walking into the clubhouse, you know everybody, they know you. It's really the people, guys, you know, that the relationship kind of centers around. Longtime staff guys, you know, training staff, clubhouse staff, guys who have just been here for a long time, in many cases longer than the players. Mm-hmm. You know, now that Ryan retired and others have come and gone, and I think that's the thing. And then, but nothing to me equals those last couple of minutes before you go on the air. And, you know, after doing it thousands of times over the years, no butterflies on that. But it's an exciting feeling. I love those first couple of innings, setting up the ball game, kind of getting a feel for what's going on, and then letting the game take us wherever it is. And that's the great thing about being a play-by-play guy. You just never know what that next pitch or that next play in the outfield or that next batted ball is going to bring. It's a constant discovery process. And I think one of the cool things about play-by-play, and I try to get this across to young broadcasters when I talk to them, you have to have the ability to immediately take what you're seeing and put it into words in a meaningful, accurate, and coherent way. And it's a challenge to do that, and it's very satisfying to do that. And I think sitting up there on some warm summer nights when the temperature's nice and we're not roasting up there, and that we got a good ball game, I think that's what I'm going to miss the most. I'm not going to miss trying to get there, which is hotels, airplanes, taxi cabs, Ubers. You know, that's the part I will not miss. And, you know, when you get into your early 70s, guys, none of you have experienced this yet, but you will. When, you know, 50s, no big deal. 60s, like, when you turn 70, it's kind of a thing that gets you thinking in ways you haven't thought before, because, you know, your life is basically three quarters of the way over or more. Who knows? Mm-hmm. But I think turning 70 a couple of years ago affected me. And I think now at 72, this is the right time for me to go ahead and do this.
Hey, Carp, we only have a minute here. When you started, you were broadcasting from RFK. Frank Robinson was the manager. Mm-hmm. Tell us what it was like that first year.
It was fun. I mean, I had been to RFK for soccer before, mm-hmm. and it was a wonderful venue. I did the World Cup there in 94. And I tell you, when Italy played Mexico, you have those two sets of fans in D.C. for a couple of days. It was crazy. So I knew the ballpark, not necessarily for baseball. It was wonderful being around Frank. I had met him before, but being around him on a daily basis, I heard that if you didn't play golf, you had no chance to be on his coaching staff.
That's
I mean, those
hilarious.
Guys are out there playing. They were out there playing every day. Those were fun early years, you know, and seeing Ryan Zimmerman in his first full year in 06. Some of the other young guys, Alfonso Soriano, had the 40-40 season. And, you know, that was the foundation. We went from there, and it's hard for me to believe that almost 20 seasons later, here we are. And it'll be my final baseball job, and I'm really good with that.
Carp, man, we've always loved having you on over the years. Congratulations on a wonderful career.
Yep. Best of luck in retirement, man. Enjoy it.
Enjoy it, okay?
Thank you, guys. I appreciate it. And congrats to all of you on your staying power because, you know, you've been around here as long as anybody, and it's always been great to visit with you guys from time to time.
Thanks. And let me just add this. Yep. The 50s don't seem like no big deal. My knees are aching. I mean, everybody's got injuries.
Yeah, my shoulder.
It's only going to get worse, buddy.
I have five letters for you. A-L-E-V-E. Aleve.
Yeah, that's all.
We got that.
All right.
We'll take you, Carp. Appreciate it, buddy.
All right, thanks, guys.
All right, man.
All right.
It's Bob Carpenter. He's retiring after 20 years in the booth with the Washington Nationals.
He's going to live off that scorebook money of all the people buying his scorebook, so good for him.
He's probably playing a lot of golf.
But let's get some insight on
Bet365 is paying out before the final whistle.
Check out Bet365's unrivaled early payout offer. When you bet on a team to win and they take a 17-point lead, you get paid no matter the final score. Forget the final whistle and start counting that cash. Hold up. You get early payout on parlays, too.
Download the app and see why it's never ordinary at Bet365. Gambling problem? Call 1-800-GAMBLER. 21 plus only. Must be physically located in Ohio. T&Cs apply.
With Ring cameras, you can protect your home from anywhere. You're at baggage claim and you get emotion alert. Check live view and see a guy looking in your car window. Luckily, you've got floodlight cam, so you press the siren button and let 105 decibels do the rest. Problem solved, home protected, bag on its way. With Ring, you can protect your home from anywhere. Learn more at ring.com.
Hate doing cardio? Try brushing and flossing your teeth. I'm not talking about building up a sweat. I'm talking about building a healthier mouth for a healthier heart, for a healthier you. Smile Generation. Trusted dentists look at your care through the lens of the mouth-body connection, because what happens in the mouth plays a critical role for the rest of your body. To find a dentist near you, committed to treating all of you, visit smilegeneration.com/confidence today and live longer, healthier, and happier with Confidence Unleashed.
Hey, it's your favorite sports talk show in the DMV, the Sports Junkies.
We're talking DC sports and having fun, chopping it up every day on the radio.
You can hear us every morning on 106.7 The Fan. But did you know our show is also a podcast?
You can get every episode, every hour, and every single highlight on Apple Podcasts, Spotify, or wherever you get your pods.
And whenever works for you.
Just open up your favorite podcast app, search the Sports Junkies, and hit the follow button to get every minute of the show.
The new member of this Nationals organization is going to set the agenda for the baseball department. From Alex Spira covers the Red Sox for the Boston Globe. Alex, it's Grant Paulson, Danny Ruye on The Fan in D.C. Thank you for joining us here. Short notice.
Thanks very much for having me on.
Yeah, our pleasure. So can you tell us a little bit about a hire that a lot of people didn't see coming in the 35-year-old Paul Toboni?
Well, I think that it's not terribly surprising for people who have been around Paul Toboni and seen his ascent in the Red Sox organization, and particularly the critical role that he's played in terms of scouting and player development. The Red Sox had for decades a very, very strong scouting and player development group, but one that had, in terms of its methods, probably fallen behind the rest of the industry by the later years of the Dave Dombrowski administration. Right, that's part of the reason why the Red Sox elected to move on from an incredibly successful executive in Dave Dombrowski, and more specifically, they wanted to incorporate more data and technology-based development and scouting into what they do. And Paul Toboni was the right person for that. He's been pretty aggressive in terms of changing how the Red Sox instruct players and help them get better, as well as changing kind of what they care about in terms of draft models and the role of the traditional scout versus various data pools. That's not to say that he dismisses either traditional training methods or traditional scouting methods, but he certainly turned the dial for the Red Sox. And I would say that in many respects, you could make a case that he was the most important person in terms of kind of overhauling those two areas for the Red Sox over the last handful of years. And there have been some very good results for the Red Sox as a result of that. The draft, obviously, they hit pretty big in the 2022 draft when they took Christian Campbell as a fourth rounder, when they took Connelly Early as a fifth rounder, when they took Roman Anthony as a second rounder. That's kind of a franchise changing pick. 2021, they drafted Marcelo Meyer. That was kind of a little bit more turnkey because Marcelo Meyer was really good in that draft class. But nonetheless, that qualifies as a very promising pick. He also had some later round picks that have been that have yielded big league value for the Red Sox, such as Hunter Dobbins, who was a solid right-hander who the Red Sox identified things that they believed they could develop. Some intrinsic talents that could be amplified once he got into their farm system. And then the overhaul of the farm system, Craig Breslow, who came on as the Red Sox chief baseball officer after the 2023 season, also deserves a fair amount of credit for this. But Breslow and Toboni have been, overseen significant change in terms of how the Red Sox develop pitchers. I should also include Red Sox Director of Player Development Brian Abraham in that process. But the Red Sox The Red Sox look very different in terms of how they try to get hitters better, how they try to get pitchers better, and by and large, they've done a pretty good job of kind of creating a big league pipeline.
Yeah, a similar overall is certainly needed here, Alex. How is he as an EQ guy, manager of people, a people person, so to speak? To put it gently and kindly, managing people around here oftentimes is like swimming through a piranha-filled acid tub when it comes to maybe managing up and navigating some of these muddy waters here. How is he in that regard?
He's generally been very good in terms of managing up, managing down, connecting with a lot of people. He is a very charismatic person who is very easy to who's very easy to connect with. However, he also has not been shy about a lot of turnover that's happened in the Red Sox baseball operations department. As part of that modernization effort, there have been a lot of longtime members of the Red Sox scouting and player development efforts who have left the organization, some of them because they weren't brought back, others because they decided to go elsewhere. So I think that the best way to put it is he hasn't been afraid to break eggs in order to achieve philosophical alignment across what he's doing. So that is, I think that it's always unsettling for an organization to go through a period of adjusting to a new leader of baseball operations. I think that there's probably going to be an adjustment period that's unavoidable there, regardless of kind of personality traits. It'll be interesting to see, for instance, will Paul Cipollone follow the same blueprint as Craig Breslow and have an external audit of the Nationals baseball operations department as he tries to get a feel for how the organization is put together. That was a really uncomfortable part of what the Red Sox did over the 2024 season. And I don't know the answer to that, but I do think that it's worth saying that Paul is someone who is not afraid of change. He brought in a lot of, he was a leader in terms of hiring a number of people from Driveline for the Red Sox, which was part of that effort to push modernization of training methods, more so training methods and development than scouting on the Driveline hires. But, Driveline comes with a reputation, warranted or not. I think that sometimes that's exaggerated because I think that the people at Driveline love baseball and they're incredibly passionate about it and incredibly passionate about making players better. And they actually I've found a number of them to be really easy to get along with, but if you hire people from the outside, start hiring a number of people for player development, then I think that it can be a tricky situation to navigate. So it's one that requires a kind of deft touch, and it'll be really interesting to see how Paul Cipollone blends together the people who are with the Nationals and have been for a long time with some people who he probably is going to want to bring on to help with the effort to modernize.
Alex Spire of the Red Sox beat in Boston joins us. He is covered very closely and knows Paul Cipollone, who's given us some insight on the Nationals' new executive, just reported in the last hour by ESPN. They'll be taking over to run their baseball operation for Mike Rizzo. It's been Mike DiBartolo in the interim. You mentioned several times over about the changes to scouting and player development that he was instrumental in enacting. What are his core philosophies, or is there like a business card kind of that you would tell us his mantra is in those areas?
I think that development is central to what he believes in. The idea that it is possible to have, development systems that can be scaled across an entire organization, where you can engage in things that are going to make a lot of players better at the same time. And so I think that he really pushed the integration of scouting and player development, where the Red Sox weren't just scouting talent kind of intrinsically, but they were identifying their organizational strengths from a player development standpoint and saying, if we get that guy who has that intrinsic trait, Christian Campbell's a good example, where he had great strike zone judgment as a hitter. He had fantastic skills on pitches in the strike zone, pitches that he swung at in college, but he hit a lot of balls in the ground, and his bat speed was good, not great. And so Paul Cipollone's scouting department identified, hey, that's a guy who we can probably make some adjustments to his bat path with very kind of structured training programs. We can also amplify his bat speed. And if you add those two things together to his pre-existing strengths, then you might have something really good. And they didn't expect him to become the minor league player of the year in 2024, albeit one who they rushed to the majors maybe a little too aggressively this year and then saw him struggle and end up spending most of the year back down in AAA this year. But that is the type of approach, to be able to integrate scouting for strengths with a clear vision of how player development can make that player better. That's at the heart of what he does in order to be able to kind of hit on value, get more value out of players than where they enter into the organization.
Give me a skill set or something. It's probably hard without sort of being in locker room every single day, grinding and figuring all the conversations. But give me something that you think he didn't have as a skill set that he's picked up, just in terms of his versatility as an executive.
Well, he had come from the first handful of years. Let me think. The first, I think, 7 years of his time with the Red Sox, entirely on the scouting side. And so I think that the real tell is that he became he was elevated to the position of VP of scouting and player development following the 2022 system, following the 2022 season. And the Red Sox absolutely floored it in terms of their overhaul of how player development worked at that time. Like, he was not shy about about getting, you know, getting to a point of feeling a considerable amount of comfort and making some sizable changes. And that's when the Red Sox started plucking guys from Driveline. So that's kind of an example of not necessarily a skill set that he lacks, but rather one, you know, he was not shy going into an area where he was less experienced making change. I would think that just by virtue of the job title, the area in which he probably has less grounding is in the professional scouting, the professional scouting side of things. But I think that the skill set is already there when you have a pretty good feel for how to scout players on the amateur side. And he has gotten some exposure to that over the course of the last couple of years, but he hasn't been directly involved in, he hasn't been directly overseeing, I should say, the Red Sox kind of player acquisitions on the pro side, whether via trade or, you know, free agent signings. That's fallen, that primary responsibility has fallen elsewhere. But I can say that he's been involved in trade conversations with other teams. He's been part of the Red Sox decision-making apparatus on those pro moves in minor league and major league moves. He just hasn't been the head decision maker in that regard.
Alex Speier, Boston Globe, with excellent insight on Paul Toboni, who's going to be running the Nats front office. Alex, thank you for joining us. We really appreciate it.
Yeah, you bet. My pleasure. Thanks for having
That's
me
informative.
On.
Thank you, buddy.
Yeah. Alex Speier on Grant and Danny here on The Fan. Exciting. If you're a Nats fan who's been wanting a new direction, you know, to possibly be more forethinking and analytical and really dive into some of the things that makes a lot of organizations that don't spend a lot of money, mm-hmm. like Washington, in this sport successful, this could be a hire that brings them into the 2020.
Violent shove forward, right? If you're not going to do more, you got to do more with less. And this is how you do that, right? So in other words, let's say you spend $1 million and making up the number. That $1 million has to go further with your organization than it does with the Dodgers or the Yankees or the Red Sox or some of the other teams that have unlimited resources.
According to reports, the Nats are on the verge of hiring a new president of baseball operations / GM. Unclear on that, but here to help us with that is our good friend from Mass and Sports, Mark Zuckerman, at Mark Zuckerman on X on Twitter. He and our good friend Al Galdi host a Nats Chat podcast, which you can get anywhere you get your podcasts. So, tell us about Paul Toboni from the Red Sox, 35-year-old, et cetera, and what his position will be, whether or not it's, you know, GM and president of baseball operations both or just one. Let's hear who the Nats just hired.
Yeah, first of all, I believe it's going to be president of baseball operations and that he will then also have a GM working for him. Now, the thing to understand here, because, you know, we had, you know, decades with Mike Rizzo essentially holding both roles or both titles, the way baseball works now a lot of places is you've elevated to the top decision maker this title of president of baseball operations with a GM working below them. The GM in those cases is not really the guy in charge, the one making all the final decisions. It's just an elevated title and a sort of right-hand man to help, you know, accomplish a lot of things. So Paul Toboni is going to be in charge of the Nationals from a baseball standpoint, whether he has somebody working underneath him or not. And it's a big move for a young guy, as you said, 35. Now, this is the way the sport's gone in a lot of cases. It's not unusual for someone that young. He's got a decade of experience. And I think what stands out about him, maybe versus some others, there are so many GMs and executives in baseball now with a straight up analytics financial background, not necessarily a straight baseball background. Guys like Mike DiBartolo, who worked in, like on Wall Street before going into baseball. In Toboni's case, he played baseball at Cal Berkeley, and he got his MBA from Notre Dame. So he has that side of it, the analytics side of it. But he also spent the last decade working his way all the way up the Red Sox scouting ladder. He started out just as an area scout looking for the next high school star and worked his way up all the way to becoming the guy who was in charge of their draft for 3 years and then ultimately becoming an assistant GM who had a lot of responsibilities for them. So it's kind of that nice sweet spot of a combination of the traditional background and plenty of scouting background while also being very well-versed in analytics. And I'm interested to see how he incorporates those two things together. In a perfect world, that's what you want, somebody who has both sides of that equation.
Are you surprised that the Nats were able to attract somebody like this?
A little bit. And his name had come up, but the thought, at least coming out of Boston, was that he was in line to be promoted to the GM of the Red Sox, working underneath their top guy, who was considered the chief baseball officer or something like that. Yeah. And the thought would be, well, of course he's going to want to stay with the Red Sox. Now, maybe this is where making him president of baseball operations, really giving him the keys to the car, is what sold him on it. I'm really curious. One of the first things I want to ask him when he's officially introduced is, what did he learn from the Lerner family about this organization? You know, I'm sure he's trying to sell himself to them, but I'm sure they're trying to sell themselves to him as well.
Don't they need what to is, in this sport?
100%. 100%. Yeah. So I want to know, what did he hear from them that convinced him, yes, this is the place I wanted to go? Because presumably as an up-and-comer working for a very good organization in Boston, there were going to be other opportunities for him, whether there or somewhere else. So I want to know, why did this one really stand out to you and say, I need to take this job? I think his answer to that would be pretty fascinating.
Yeah, I mean, he probably wouldn't reveal this, perhaps, but don't you think he needed some level of commitment, financial and otherwise, from the Lerners before taking this gig?
Yeah, I would think so, or at least a general idea of what they anticipate doing. Now,
I'm not talking about compensation for him. I'm talking about a commitment to player development, to free agents, to managers, etc. The Lerners have a rep here that, like you said, they had probably had to sell themselves to him.
Yeah, no, 100%. And I think what is important in his standpoint, you kind of mentioned there, it's not just how much are you going to spend on the major league payroll. It's how much money are you going to give me to build the infrastructure of the organization, to hire player development people, front office staffers, scouts, analysts, everything that we need to have an organization that I believe is going to be good enough to win and compete for championships. So that's all stuff that I would think, if I'm in his position, I want to have some assurances and know what I'm getting into here. Do I think they told him, hey, we're going to have a top five budget in the majors? I'm going to guess probably not, but I would hope that whatever they did tell him was satisfactory enough to make him believe that they can be competitive here and that this isn't necessarily a Tampa Bay Rays or Pittsburgh Pirates kind of situation, because that would, I think you would step into that a little more leery of what the future would hold.
Real quickly, for everybody that's not paying close attention to this, tell everybody what's coming down the road with respect to, a collective bargaining agreement and a potential, for the first time ever, salary cap in this sport.
Yeah, this is the underlying thing, not just for the Nationals, but across all right. baseball. But it certainly fits in with a lot of what I think the Lerners are coping with right now and trying to figure out as they map things out the next few years. The CBA expires after next season at the end of 2026, and you're already hearing some pretty serious talk on both sides of the equation, players and owners, about lockouts, about demand, and owners demanding a salary cap, something that they last really tried to do in 1994. How'd that work out? Well, they lost the World Series and they didn't even get their salary cap in the end. Right. The union has always been adamantly opposed to that. Do they think they can pull it off this time? I don't know, perhaps, but they're certainly talking in those terms like they want to do that. So they're definitely gearing up for the potential of some kind of work stoppage in 27 or major changes, and who knows how long that takes. And then on top of that, there's a major issue for MLB with their media rights, their TV rights, that Rob Manfred is openly saying that he hopes to have all 30 teams essentially give up their local TV rights to the league so that it can be packaged as one huge sum to deal out to whoever might want it, and that comes up in 2028. So those are the underlying factors, and if you're the Lerners, the thought is, are they just biding their time until that's all settled and they're going to kind of stay with the low payroll and go in that direction now? Would you go all in now, or are they thinking, hey, if we're going to have a salary cap in a few years, that changes the whole financial dynamic of it? The TV situation we know is a huge deal for them. Whether they would sell the team someday may be tied into all of this. So it's a lot to consider beyond just, you know, what they're looking to do in 2026.
How much does the value of, say, a Nationals, you know, on the open market for sale, how much does it increase the value if there's a salary cap in the sport?
It could. The thought would be, I guess you would say, okay, they would have a better chance of being more competitive by not having to try to spend alongside the Yankees and the Mets, right, and the Dodgers and that kind of thing. So it could. But in theory, that also raises the value of the Pirates and the Royals and the Reds and teams like that. So I think it really boils down to it. I firmly believe that if the Learners are ultimately want to sell the team, but they're not going to do it until they get the price number that they want, which they obviously, right, have not gotten yet, what's the best way to get there? To me, it's always been have a better team. You know, have a more successful yeah. franchise with more fans and all that kind of stuff. Now, maybe a salary cap helps them get there, but I if they're just thinking that alone solves all the issues, I'm not sure that's 100% true, because you see in other sports with salary caps, there are still the bottom feeders who lose every year and are still not effective at winning, no matter what the salary balance may be.
Yeah, and I think the TV thing is also incredibly interesting as it relates to somebody like Ted Leonsis as a potential buyer, because obviously that would be for monumental, but if baseball is controlling the TV part of it for, say, the Nats and many other teams, that's, you know, something we can talk about in the future. Anyway, there are other things I wanted to chat about with you. How would you sort of describe James Wood's season?
Roller coaster, although it was entirely going up for the first half and pretty much going down the second half until the last 2 days. Thankfully, he's hit three homers in the last 2 days, hasn't struck out, and so he may yet salvage this. It's probably the most dramatic one half to the other half I've ever seen from a player. He was so good in the first half, and we're talking about him being a 40-plus homer, iconic season, among the likes of Bryce Harper and Juan Soto when they were here. And that was legit. That's what he was headed for. Mm-hmm. And the second half, it fell apart. And until just these last couple of days, he only hit three home runs since the All-Star break and was striking out at an incredible rate, to the fact that he probably won't get there now, thanks to the last few days. But he was on pace to break the all-time single-season strikeout record in Major League Baseball of 223 by Mark Reynolds of the Diamondbacks.
He's eight short of that right now. He's struck out more than anybody in the league this year.
Yeah. So, and it, you know, it's one thing to say, oh, you strike out a lot, but you're still making great contact. No, that wasn't happening either. So a huge tail off. Now, I think everybody believes this guy is going to be really good for a really long time. And it was a strange second half with the firings. Maybe the home run derby screwed him up. Give him an offseason to clear his mind, come back spring training with a new manager, new coaching staff, and he should be fine. But it was very discouraging to see that the drop-off be that dramatic and for it to take this long for him to start to get it back together again.
Talking to Mark Zuckerman from Masson, how good has the last few weeks been? I mean, I want to start with just Cleveland. They're on the verge. If they hold off the Tigers and they now have a one-game lead, they finally overcame the Tigers last night in the American League Central. They were 15.5 back on July 8th. They were 10.5 back on September 1st. This would be an all-time comeback since the divisions were a part of it in 1969. I mean, I know for us, football season starts and there's a big shift in attention, but tell everybody what Cleveland is about to accomplish.
Oh, and you just outlined it. It's one of, if not the greatest comebacks ever. And you got to understand, they were not on anybody's radar at all. And Detroit was so far out in front that it was just assumed, oh, they're going to have the best record in the league. And what a great story this has become as a team who had a surprise run last year to make the playoffs, and all of a sudden they're not assured of anything anymore. They're fighting whether for the division or it would actually be the final wild card. The way that's set up, it's now down to them and Houston for the last wild card. And if they miss out, that's a monumental collapse for a franchise that just never thought it was going to be in that position. So it's a huge deal. Caught everyone in the sport by surprise. Now, we knew Cleveland was good last year. They went to the ALCS before losing to the Yankees. They have talent, but the season was not going in that direction for them at all. And Detroit looked far and away the superior team. Cleveland's taken it to them in these last two games that they've been facing head-to-head. You know, I really would like to see Detroit still get in because I think they're a great story. They have Kyle Finnegan, the former Nats closer, in their bullpen. I would love to see them make a run as well, but you can't discount what the Guardians have done. And it's really, it has been a fascinating final week. We don't often get this where you've got multiple division races and wild card races that look like they're going to go right down at the final day.
I want to make sure I'm clear on this. If we get a bunch of ties, we now have tiebreakers in place to avoid multiple playoff games before the playoffs begin, correct?
Yeah, there's no more game 163, unfortunately. I loved those when they would come up, that one extra game when it's all said and done.
Yeah.
That you got to go play and
the
you have no time to prep for it. I loved it, but I understand why baseball did this with the three-game wild card series now. Trying to pack that all in and get it done right around Halloween was too much. So it is tiebreakers, and that's why when you look at the standings, and they'll mention it on all these broadcasts that, like, you know, even if the Mets end up tied with the Reds, well, the Reds have the tiebreaker over them, so they have to finish ahead of them in order to get in. So there's a lot of that stuff. It's unfortunate. I love the old method, but I do understand why, you know, there just aren't enough days in the calendar for them to account for those tiebreaker games anymore.
So we've talked about the Cleveland overcoming Detroit. How about what Seattle's done in the American League West? By the way, Houston has not missed the postseason since 2016. They're on the verge of potentially missing the postseason this year unless they can have a big weekend and snag one of the wild cards. But just give me a minute on Cal Raleigh and the Mariners.
The Mariners have had a wonderful season. It's their first division title in 24 years since Ichiro was a rookie in 2001, and they won a record 116 games that year.
Right.
The whole city, the whole Northwest seems to have gotten 100% behind them. And the big reason is the big dumper himself, Cal Raleigh, who last night hit his 59th and 60th home runs. And I know the number 60 doesn't mean what it used to because it's become a little more common the last few decades. But what you got to understand with Cal Raleigh, he's done this as a catcher. And he's not like a part-time catcher. He is a full-time catcher and a good one, a switch-hitting catcher. To hit 60 home runs with the physical demands of that position and to do it in a way that's carrying a team to a division title, maybe even the number one seed in the American League, depending on how it all shakes out, that's why he is a serious contender, if not the favorite, over Aaron Judge for the AL MVP. It's an iconic, memorable season for a guy who really embodies what that team has become.
Yeah, I mean, this probably is more me than maybe the majority of people that are listening, but there's no chance I could have identified Cal Raleigh at the beginning of the season in terms of what team he played on.
No, and there's a lot of people, I'm sure, you know, people in baseball knew who he was, but he has not done anything to this extent. It's such a breakthrough season. It's really just become like this bigger than life situation that he's done. And also keep in mind, just from Seattle standpoint, the Mariners standpoint, they are the only franchise that's never been to the World Series now. The Nationals were the previous one when they got there in 2019 as the Expos and Nationals.
Well, they're the favorite in the American League right now.
Yeah, and I think they deserve to be. It's wide open. There really isn't an obvious favorite this year in either league, I don't think. But if Seattle were to get there, there's a huge emotional component to that. A franchise that's existed since 1977 and is the only one left in the majors that has never reached the World Series.
So, you know, of course I'm going to reach out to you next week again for the playoffs. But right now, while I have you, because I'm looking at the odds, the Phillies are the current favorite to win the World Series. The Mariners are actually second ahead of the Dodgers and the Yankees and the Brewers, who for much of the season looked like the best team in baseball. Is this the year that the Phillies get it done?
It could be, but I really don't feel like anybody is head and shoulders the favorites above anyone else. Uh-huh. And in the Phillies' case, their starting pitching has been dominant, and that means a lot, as we know, in the postseason.
But injuries.
Their bullpen, they've had injuries, and their bullpen is incredibly shaky. And we've also seen how big an impact that can make on teams come the postseason. So, I'm hesitant to label anyone as a favorite going into it. I think Milwaukee has had a fantastic season. Another team that you don't necessarily look at the names and they're not going to wow you, but 1 through 26 on their roster, they have contributors everywhere, and they have maintained a pace all year that a lot of teams have gone up and down all year. The Brewers have kind of maintained it throughout, which to me is a good sign of what they're capable of. But this is what, you know, one of the great things and one of the hard things about baseball, you can watch the sport for 162 games and think you know who the best teams are.
Oh yeah.
And all of a sudden you get into a short series, especially the 3-game wild card series, and God knows anything can happen. And a team that has a bad bullpen, well, all they need is two guys at the back end who step up at the right moment and can carry you. So I mean,
your team did it a few years ago, the Diamondbacks.
100%.
So one other quick question while I have you on the phone, because I watched the Kershaw, you know, final, the retirement announcement, his last start. He actually came in last night out of the bullpen. Is he a starter in a playoff series for the Dodgers, or is he in the bullpen?
I was watching it too last night. I thought it was a very interesting decision. They're still trying to wrap up the West.
Yeah.
So there was
reason. They got a 2.5 game lead. They should get it done, right?
Yeah. They're in pretty good shape because they won that game in extra innings last night. I'm very fascinated. You talk about injuries. The Dodgers have had a ton of pitching injuries in particular. And yes, they're the Dodgers. They have more depth than anyone else and they can handle it. But it's very much up in the air how they're going to arrange their rotation, what Kershaw is going to be. He's not the same Kershaw from, you know, years ago. And they acknowledge that, and he acknowledges that, and he knows he's retiring at the end. They've used him in the bullpen in the playoffs before. It hasn't worked out. You may remember
Game 5
in 2019,
yeah.
Soto and Rendon back-to-back. So there's a little bit of that, like, shell
after
shock.
He had gotten out of the sixth, remember?
Yeah.
And the standing ovation, and the shot of him in the dugout after he gave up the back-to-backs was just amazing from that series.
He was shell-shocked, 100%. Yeah. So maybe there's a little bit in the back of their minds about that. The Dodgers have they got to get in first, and they're just about in, but then they got to figure out how are they going about it. And that, to me, is a perfect example of, like, this team that on paper, you know all the star power, they should be one of the favorites, but they've got to piece it all together, and maybe they will, and they'll go on this run, and in the end we'll say, well, clearly the Dodgers were best. Or maybe they're out in 3 games because they weren't able to get it all together. It would be a fairy tale story for Kershaw, but they've got plenty of question marks as much as anybody else going into it.
Thanks for doing this, as always. I'd love to talk to you next week, too, when we get all the matchups. But I will reach out then. Mark Zuckerman, everybody. Talk to you soon. Enjoy the final weekend.
Thank you, Kevin.
Yep. At Mark Zuckerman on X on Twitter. All right. Up next, we talk college football with our guy Denton Day. This is a phenomenal college football weekend. And by the way, it could start with a big upset opportunity tomorrow night. That's next.
Britt Giroli of The Athletic joins us now. Does a great job covering Major League Baseball. Britt, it's good to have you back on the Blitz. What do you make?
Bet365 is paying out before the final whistle.
Check out Bet365's unrivaled early payout offer. When you bet on a team to win and they take a 17-point lead, you get paid no matter the final score. Forget the final whistle and start counting that cash. Hold up. You get early payout on parlays, too.
Download the app and see why it's never ordinary at Bet365. Gambling problem? Call 1-800-GAMBLER. 21 plus only. Must be physically located in Ohio. T&Cs apply.
With Ring cameras, you can protect your home from anywhere. You're at baggage claim and you get emotion alert. Check live view and see a guy looking in your car window. Luckily, you've got floodlight cam, so you press the siren button and let 105 decibels do the rest. Problem solved, home protected, bag on its way. With Ring, you can protect your home from anywhere. Learn more at ring.com.
Hate doing cardio? Try brushing and flossing your teeth. I'm not talking about building up a sweat. I'm talking about building a healthier mouth for a healthier heart.
for a healthier you. Smile Generation trusted dentists look at your care through the lens of the mouth-body connection, because what happens in the mouth plays a critical role for the rest of your body. To find a dentist near you, committed to treating all of you, visit smilegeneration.com/confidence today and live longer, healthier, and happier with Confidence Unleashed.
Hey, it's your favorite sports talk show in the DMV, the Sports Junkies.
We're talking DC sports and having fun, chopping it up every day on the radio.
You can hear us every morning on 106.7 The Fan. But did you know our show is also a podcast?
You can get every episode, every hour, and every single highlight on Apple Podcasts, Spotify, or wherever you get your pods.
And whenever works for you.
Just open up your favorite podcast app, search the Sports Junkies, and hit the follow button to get every minute of the show.
Of the Nationals, huge hiring of Paul Toboni to run their baseball operation, just 35 years old, coming over as a rising star in Boston's organization.
Yeah, I think a couple things, guys. I think it's certainly a big swing by the Nats. I think to get a guy like that to come from Boston, I mean, obviously they basically had to skip a level with him. He's an assistant GM, or he was in Boston, very well thought of, has really been a climber and has gone quickly up the ranks there. I've heard he's a very nice guy, a little bit light, obviously, on leading a team experience, right? Usually the progression is you go from AGM to GM to president. Obviously, he felt like he wasn't going to take the job unless he was going to be a true number one. He was probably going to be Breslow's number two in Boston this winter had he stayed there, guys. So I think it surprises me, really, I think in a good way, that the Learners were able to land someone like this, that they trust him enough to, as I reported last night, let him hire a GM under him. So it looks like they're going to do what they should have done a long time ago, fill out that front office and kind of get with the times and hopefully kind of get up to speed in analytics and data and just build out your team the way almost every organization is right now. So I think it is a good move. I am a little bit shocked in a good way.
Yeah, I think that sentiment speaks for a lot of Nats fans, myself included, Brett. What do you think this means for the Learners, their involvement, lack thereof, however you want to quantify that? This is a good first step, but if it exists in, you know, in a vacuum, then so what, right?
Right. I think, you know, I'm curious. I would imagine the press conference is probably Monday. Otherwise, they have to wait until Friday. I'm curious what he says about this job to Boney, like why he wanted to come here. Because, you know, you look at this, and this is certainly a rebuild situation, but they've been marred in a rebuild for a while. So, you know, did the Learner family say we're going to commit to payrolls again? You know, did he sell them on the fact that they don't need to spend this kind of money to win, that they could beat Tampa Bay or Cleveland? And, you know, did he, you know, I'm kind of really curious as to how that all came together, because if we think, and there is a school of thought here, that the Learners are not in it for the long term, that they may revisit selling the team after the next CBA, which negotiations would be after the 2026 season, what sold them on this, and how far in are they willing to go? You know, what sold him on DC? Because certainly he could have stayed in Boston, been the GM, and probably would have been on the short list next winter to lead several baseball operations as well. So, you know, the Learners had to do a good job here of selling what they were going to do as owners. And I'm curious if their style changes at all versus what we saw the last few years of Mike Rizzo.
Yeah, Britt, it's a good point. I want to dive deeper into the GM search and maybe the marriage of outside voices and inside knowledge of the operation. How do you think things land for guys like Mike DiBartolo, the acting GM, his assistant Mark Shalaba, you know, Eddie Longos, who runs player development, and some of the high-ranking officials within the Nats?
Yeah, that's going to be really interesting. And you look at it, and you look at the guys that Toboni worked under, and, you know, Chaim Bloom is a good example. Like, Toboni came in, and he was with three different, I think, leadership changes in Boston. And, you know, when Chaim Bloom came in, he didn't fire anyone. He kind of moved some people around, and he got his guys in place. But, you know, he didn't just come in and start saying, you know, everything that went on before was wrong. And I'd be surprised if that's the case here in D.C. I think as it relates to Mike DiBartolo, which is what people have been asking me, I think he's open to staying. I think having the ability to have a GM under him, you know, makes him either a candidate for the GM job, or perhaps they say, listen, we're going to have you be an AGM, but you're going to be in charge of this department over here. I don't necessarily think it's the end of the road for all of the longtime execs. I think there's going to be a lot of changes I think often in these cases, too, guys could be working on multi-year contracts, and it could be really that next year is an audition, not just for the players on the field with the Nationals, but for executives and to kind of evaluate the systems and the processes that are in place as well. I mean, smart executives don't go in and fire everybody, right? You don't burn it to the ground. You have to go in and see what's going on and see who is good and see where you can improve. And I think that's going to be the case here. I think there is a world where Mike DiBartolo does stay and he does add to this organization. So I wouldn't rule that out.
What do you see as Toboni's biggest challenge coming here?
I think there's a lot of challenges, guys. I think the biggest challenge is going to be player development. And you look at what he's done, and you know, he obviously did a great job in helping rebuild Boston's minor league system. You know, he oversaw the draft when they drafted, you know, a lot of their stars, Marcelo Meyer and Roman Anthony, right? But the Nationals' problem has not been drafting studs. It has been developing these guys. It's been guys getting better in the national system. And I think to have a healthy, functioning pipeline, you have to have that. You have to have a seventh rounder. You have to find the Stephen Kwans of the world, right? The Tarik Skubals, the guys who aren't hyped prospects and who aren't super touted coming out of college. You have to find those guys, and you have to develop them. So I think that's going to be the real marker of whether or not they can do this. You look at Baltimore, and yes, they've struggled to do certain things, but what they did really well was they drafted and developed well, and they turned around that team so quickly because of what they were able to do there. And I think for the Nationals, that's what you have to look at. Now, you know, you certainly would like, when the time comes, for the Nationals to be more aggressive in free agency than, you know, the team up the road. But I think when you look at what's going to turn them around quicker and what the biggest challenge is for someone running that department, it's going to be fixing the drafting and developing that's going on, fixing the pipeline, having the Nationals rank in the top five, you know, top 10 again of Major League Baseball is going to set them up for the future more than any kind of free agencies. And I understand people want stars. People want the learners to open up the checkbooks and this, that, and the other. But if they don't fix this, they're never going to be a contending, consistent big league team.
Rich Rowley, well said and great insight. Thank you. We'll be reading your work in The Athletic.
Thanks, guys. Take care.
Thanks,
you
Britt.
Got it. There's Britt on the Beltway Blitz.
Mitch and Finley, 106.7 The Fan. If you miss any of our interview with Jason Epstein, get on the Odyssey app, hit rewind, check out the podcast. He's headed to Bethpage right now. Really good Ryder Cup breakdown, what to expect. Really excited for the golf this weekend. I was also really excited yesterday. The Nats made a big hire. So they fired Rizzo back in July, right? And let's be real, they fired Riz because he wouldn't fire Davey. That's the reality. I think that's been actually reported. I think Lavero reported it, but I think we all kind of, if you saw that situation, it's hard to think anything else. Then they let the dude DiBartolo run the draft, and I think people were by and large excited by the draft, and people thought maybe DiBartolo gets to keep the job. Yesterday, Jeff Passan of ESPN reported that the Nats are going to hire Red Sox senior vice president, assistant GM Paul Toboni to run their baseball operations. He's a young guy. He's only 35. He's been promoted fast, has worked hard, smart guy, played baseball at Cal, got an MBA from Notre Dame. I think there's a lot of reason to be excited about this. I checked in with some of the baseball people I know, and specifically a buddy of mine said the thing to like most is how they've drafted in Boston, and Toboni was the guy in charge of their draft. And I think that is really vital to understand. That Red Sox organization has had some pretty big transitions. They went from like super big spenders to not. They also have traded away some big pieces. But as far as the draft goes that Toboni was running up there, my boy says you're going to like it. Unfortunately, I'm reading directly from a text. It said, if the learners don't get out of the way, it won't matter. So I think that's still the reality here. But whatever, if you can just build up enough young talent, maybe it'll work. And I think considering the coming work stoppage in baseball, which seems all but a lock that baseball is going to lose, I guess, the 27 season, I think. Or maybe they don't end up losing the season. But there's serious labor trouble coming for baseball. I think Washington would be wise just to try to build through the draft. And until, you know, things get worked out on the back end of the financials for all of baseball. And so if that's the plan, I think this dude makes a ton of sense. And I think there's real reason to be excited about it. This is an aggressive young dude. And you never know, right? Like, this is not a proven commodity, but this is somebody whose scouting and drafting acumen is lauded, like, across the league. And I think the way the Nats are playing, they're going to keep having a lot of high draft picks. So if you can start to hit on those, like we're seeing, certainly James Wood, maybe Gore, Cruz, you know, depending how down that list you want to go of guys you think you can absolutely count on, and then the draft they put together this year, I think there are reasons to be excited about this hire. I think all we can do is hope that he is given all the tools he needs to field a competitive, winning baseball team. All right.
Andrew Golden covers the Nats for the Washington Post. I believe he has confirmed that Toboni's on his way into D.C. to run the baseball ops department. So, Andrew, tell us about the hire and why today and how we got here.
Yeah, I think it's a really interesting move. Obviously, Toboni has a lot of experience with the Red Sox and their scouting department. The Red Sox are known for developing some of the, you know, top prospects in baseball. Obviously, Christian Campbell, Marcelo Meyer, Roman Anthony, and those sort of things. So I think it's an interesting hire. Obviously, there's a focus on player development and improving in that area. I think this is a great hire. I think obviously he's a lot of experience. He's very young, obviously being 35, but I think it's really interesting. But obviously having a similar model to the Red Sox, who have developed a lot in their player development and obviously getting to where they're at, I think it's really important, and I think it's a good hire.
What does it mean for Mike DiBartolo?
That's a great question. I think it's the biggest thing. You know, it's unclear at this point in time if head of baseball operations, I mean, he's the president of baseball operations, if he's the GM, is there somebody under him? How does Mike DiBartolo fit in? And so I think we're still trying to figure that out, but it's a little bit unclear at this point.
So what could that look like, Andrew? Like, if he wanted to keep him around, could he be president of Bartolo's GM and kind of go deeper into, like, how you think that initial process goes to determine the fate of a guy like DiBartolo or Shalaba or so many other guys in the front office that have worked so hard over the years?
Yeah, it should be interesting. It's a matter of, like, do you want to bring in, you know, some fresh perspective, or do you want to bring in people who have been there before and know the ropes a little bit? And so I think it's a matter of how do the learners want to structure this? How do they want, how much influence are they allowing, you know, Toboni to have in the process versus how much of it is them be like, you want to keep these guys, we know them and we understand what they've done. So I think it's interesting to see how it plays out. And I think, again, there's a lot more questions than answers at this point in time. So I think it's interesting to see how it all plays out.
So they hired an executive search firm, and those don't come cheap. And you get one of these guys that's in demand, which probably doesn't come cheap. And you would think you got to give him a pretty good amount of authority and you know, the ability to kind of implement what he would like, .. So the other million-dollar question, or maybe more than that on everybody's mind, Andrew, is does this mean that the Lerner family and then everyone in charge is now going to start, you know, the required spending, not just on players, but on everything to make this a competitive organization again?
Yeah, I think it's interesting to see, like, will they actually invest? I think I heard Grant saying this before, you know, before I hopped on. Like, it's like, you know, obviously you can hire a new GM to hire these different things, but, like, what is the investment like in terms of money into building the team to where it needs to be, right? Like, obviously the Red Sox, as much as they have, you know, a lot of these young prospects, they also signed Alex Bregman to a big contract this offseason. I know there are opt-outs and those sort of things, but, like, I think it's a matter of, like, how much are you not only just willing to invest in hiring smart people who can help develop in some areas, but also how much you're willing to invest monetarily into getting the system to where it needs to be. And that's not just spending on players, too. It's like, do you put the right things in the minor leagues, you put people in the right positions to be successful? Are you hiring the right coaches? So there's a lot of things that go into, are you spending and investing? It's not just, you know, player acquisition. It's also like, what are you putting around the players to help them be successful?
What are the chances that Toboni blows this thing up even further this offseason? You know, you trade a Mackenzie Gore to add to the system and get a bunch of guys in your image to kind of create that minor league competition to build this thing back up. I can't imagine, like, a CJ's on the move, but, you know, that they really, instead of saying, hey, we got this young core, we're not that far away, we spend a little money. What about, like, moving a couple of guys that are assets and trying to reboot this rebuild?
Yeah, I think it's a great question. Again, it's a matter of how does Toboni kind of operate and where are his thoughts on the system. Like, we really don't know what he thinks of it, but I think that the offseason moves that he makes will be a telling sign of where he views the organization and how he thinks it'll be best to get them back to the top. And so I'm interested to kind of see how things shake out this offseason, I think it'll be a pretty good predictor of how he kind of views the team.
Andrew, thank you, buddy. Really appreciate it.
Thanks, guys. Appreciate it.
As promised, the ace of the Nationals, lefty Mackenzie Gore, is with us on Grant and Danny. Mac, I want to start with your last outing against Atlanta. What's it like when you're facing a team in back-to-back starts over the span of 6 days? Obviously, this time around, you know, they end up getting the better of you the second time. Sometimes you see the pitcher have the advantage, but I feel like when hitters just saw you, you know, they're better off.
Yeah, I think, you know, definitely. It's always interesting when you face a team back-to-back outings. But you just kind of have to understand that they're going to make an adjustment, and when you see what adjustment they make, you have to be able to make the adjustment quick, and, you know, we didn't do that. But, yeah, it's always interesting because they just saw you, and especially when you have success against them, you know, they have to make an adjustment. So,
how different is the prep, too? Because you had thrown so well, like 5 1/3, 2 hits, no runs, and they're going to throw a similar lineup maybe with an adjustment or two at you. Do you just kind of go back to your good versus their good, or do you try to say, okay, here's what they're expecting, so let me do this other thing?
Yeah, I think you have to understand it did work, so that's important to know. And well, yeah, you kind of want to beat them to the adjustment and do something a little different that they're not expecting. And that's how you know, kind of get the guys out quick. But yeah, you know, you have to understand it worked. So if it continues to work, you can continue to do it, but kind of find that happy medium of make the adjustment first and get them out a different way or continue to do what's working.
Mackenzie Gore of the Nationals on Grant and Danny. I know based on just talking to you the last couple of weeks, you're frustrated that you missed any time. One of your goals was to post every 5 days, but you just about did that. You're going to end up pitching close to 170 innings. You're going to strike out almost 200 batters in a year where you made it an all-star team. There's a lot to like here. When you look back, and I get that I'm asking you to kind of do that before your final start, but how do you think you'll feel about this season? What are some of your kind of big picture thoughts?
Yeah, I mean, I think understanding that there was a lot of good things that I did, and kind of understand that. Also understand we didn't finish the way we wanted to finish. But, you know, we got to be able to – we were better. We were moving in the right direction. And I think there was a lot of guys on this team that did make strides, and we have to continue to do that. And I think good things will happen. But, yeah, understand we did a lot of good things and learned from what didn't – when it didn't go as well. But, you know, we were better than the year before and continue to move forward.
And, I mean, for you personally, like every year in the major leagues, you've gotten better statistically by way of ERA, and I think this was another pretty sizable leap, it felt like, for you. Is that the way you view 2025?
Yeah, I think so. And, you know, I think once you look at it, you're going to go, well, this, you know, happened at the end, and it might not look as attractive as it was, you know, if you just look at it, you know, straightforward. But, yeah, you know, more quality starts, more strikeouts. And, yeah, you know, I think it's just another leap forward, but also understanding that there's another level to this that it could be. And I think I showed that for, you could argue, 4 months. But understand that we want to put a 6-month season together, and it could be a really good one.
Yeah, but I think you go into the offseason feeling close to that, right? Like,
yeah.
the amount of starts now that you need to say, okay, let's get rid of that one or change this, that number diminishes every year. The other thing I thought about this year I want to get your insight on is I thought there were more outings where, like, early on you go, ugh, I don't know if he has his good stuff tonight. And then you fast forward an hour and a half in real time, and you're pitching, and you've only given up a run, and it's the fifth inning, and you're at 85 pitches or whatever. Like some of those outings where there was one specific I remember where I think the bases were loaded with like nobody out, and then you get out of that jam and a run in or something, and next thing you know, you shove the rest of the way. I feel like that club was not one you had in the bag a few years ago.
Yeah, I think, you know, there's a lot of, you know, work don't come in this year of, you know, the mental part of the game and just understanding that one at a time, and even when things happen, you know, I'm sure you're talking about this Chicago start. The bases are loaded. They've got, what, 3 singles, and we got nobody out. So it's like, you know, oh boy. But then we just get it a pitch at a time, and we were able to get out of that. And then I don't think we gave up a hit for the next 6 innings. So, yeah, I think that's just the mental part of the game. I think experience helps, and I think that's also something I worked on going into the year. And, yeah, I think when you look at it, you look at those 20 runs we gave up after the All-Star break. That was really the only time that you could really argue that it was, you know, pretty ugly. So,
Mackenzie Gore of the Nats, weekly appointment with us here on Grant and Danny. Mackenzie, I'd be remiss if I didn't ask you here before we let you go. You guys made a big hire yesterday off the field in the front office. Paul Toboni, who's 35 years old. He's a rising star executive in Boston who kind of reworked how they develop pitchers, develop draft. He gets a lot of credit for the young success of players at the major league level in Boston, has been hired, and it signals seemingly on the outside a very new direction for this organization. What's your response or the response of the ball club to, you know, a big swing from this ownership group to bring in a young rising star?
Yeah, I mean, we're excited. You know, it's, you know what's going on now as a player, which is great. So just kind of building that relationship and just looking forward to, you know, obviously getting to know him and then helping us get better. So, yeah, exciting day, like you said, and looking forward to everybody getting better in the winter and come back ready to go.
It seems to me like, McKenzie, just based on the leadership role you've taken and some of the times you've challenged guys publicly this year, like if he was to sit down with you post-exit interviews or something just to pick the brain of a few players, that you might have a lot to say or some opinions that could be beneficial. Would you feel like, I mean, obviously you're not going to share them here, but that you would be able to kind of say, hey, here are the things I think we need to do a lot better, a lot differently. Here's something I would consider. Is that something you'd like to have an opportunity to do with someone coming in here to set up a new shop?
Yeah, man, I think communication is very important. From both sides of, I've been here for, it's four seasons now. And then also what does it look like from, another organization outside looking in, what does it look like with this group? And I think that's always interesting to hear what people think, just kind of looking at us the last few years and looking at the players and the group we have. So I think communication is very important, and, I'm sure that, there will be some communication with, somebody, and that's how you get better. You communicate and you're honest with each other. And I think hopefully that's what we do.
Hey, last one. I'm thinking Jacob Young's got a shot at a gold glove. I mean, he's made so many ridiculous catches the last week and a half or so, and that's not the reason for my point. He's just been terrific in center all year long. Could have won one last year. But this one coincides better timing-wise than last year, where I think ballots are out and they're due, and it's been a really kind of sexy highlight week, sizzle reel week for him. What do you think about JY as a gold glove candidate?
Yeah, I mean, I think it's real. I think not even just the crazy plays back it up. His numbers are great. And then, with the voting, if you watch Jacob Young play center field, you go, yeah, he's as good as anybody in center field. And it's pretty easy to see. And you just love the way he plays the game. He's got a high motor. He runs balls. He's, always as a pitcher, it's great to see a guy play like that. And, but yeah, these catches this last week have been pretty impressive. So that New York game was fun to watch.
I mean, going hacky sack style, kicking it to himself, I've never seen that before.
Yeah, me either.
Well, then again, it's probably never happened before, so maybe nobody
has. Yeah, I'm going to say that's probably never happened. The kick save was good.
Kick save and a beauty. Mackenzie, thank you, man. Good catching up.
Yep, appreciate it.
That was Mackenzie Gore, presented by Main Street Bank. Sure, local bank, local, put their team in your office. Visit mstreetbank.com for more information. Member FDIC, equal housing lender. Always love catching up with the ace of your Washington Nationals. That's going to do it for us here tonight.
Listen up, football fans. You won't want to miss this.
Right now, new Bet365 customers bet $5 and get $200 in bonus bets, win or lose. So you could turn that $200 into something bigger when you bet on Moneyline, Spread, Totals, Player Props.
$200 in bonus bets when new customers bet $5. I know where I'm going to bet from now on. Download the app today and see why it's never ordinary at Bet365. Gambling problem? Call 1-800-GAMBLER. 21 plus only. Must be physically located in Ohio. T&Cs apply. In app only.
With Ring cameras, you can protect your home from anywhere. You're at baggage claim, and you get a motion alert.
check live view and see a guy looking in your car window. Luckily, you've got floodlight cam. So you press the siren button and let 105 decibels do the rest. Problem solved. Home protected. Bag on its way. With Ring, you can protect your home from anywhere. Learn more at ring.com.
Hate doing cardio? Try brushing and flossing your teeth. I'm not talking about building up a sweat. I'm talking about building a healthier mouth for a healthier heart, for a healthier you. Smile Generation. Trusted dentists look at your care through the lens of the mouth-body connection, because what happens in the mouth plays a critical role for the rest of your body. To find a dentist near you, committed to treating all of you, visit smilegeneration.com/confidence today and live longer, healthier, and happier with Confidence Unleashed.
Hey, it's your favorite sports talk show in the DMV, the Sports Junkies.
We're talking DC sports and having fun, chopping it up every day on the radio.
You can hear us every morning on 106.7 The Fan.
But did you know our show is also a podcast?
You can get every episode, every hour, and every single highlight on Apple Podcasts, Spotify, or wherever you get your pods.
And whenever works for you.
Just open up your favorite podcast app, search the Sports Junkies, and hit the follow button to get every minute of the show.